Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are those of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of 1480 KPHX or our sponsors. In 1944, Nazi Germany created the V-2 rocket military program. The rocket reached 100 kilometers, also known as the boundary to space.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection. Russia has demanded UN action to get all foreign military personnel out of Greece.
October 4, 1957, under the mission name Sputnik 1, the USSR launches the first artificial satellite to be put in geocentric orbit. December 19, 1958, American President Dwight D. Eisenhower.
This is the President of the United States speaking. Through the marvels of scientific advance, my voice is coming to you from a satellite circling in outer space. Through this unique means, I convey to you and to all mankind America's wish for peace on Earth and goodwill.
April 12, 1961, Russian Yuri Gagarin is the first man to travel into space aboard the rocket Vostok 1. May 25, 1961, American President John F. Kennedy.
Now it is time to take longer strides. Time for a great new American enterprise. Time for this nation to take a clearly leading role in space achievement, which in many ways may hold the key to our future on Earth. I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
The United States government approves the Central Intelligence Agency Act. The act is the sole legal basis for secret government spending by the United States government. Excerpts of the bill read:
the sums made available to the agency may be expended without regard to the provision of law and regulations relating to the expenditure of government funds, and for objects of a confidential, extraordinary, or emergency nature, such expenditures to be accounted for solely on the certificate of the director.
The year 2000. Futurist Alfred Lambermont Weber authors the book Exopolitics: Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe.
Exopolitics is the science of relations between our planet Earth and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. My book, Exopolitics: Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, launched the science of exopolitics.
March 17, 2007, Dr. Michael Salla joins Alfred Weber on Exopolitics Radio to discuss the CIA Act and the so-called black budget.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, and I really want to welcome all of you back. We had quite a show last week launching Exopolitics Radio as a celebration of the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And we started the show with a brief review of the concept of Exopolitics. Exopolitics, of course, was nominated for Word of the Year of 2005. The Associated Press reported that in January of 2006. And what exopolitics is really the new political science of outer space. It's the science of relations between our planet Earth and possible intelligent civilizations elsewhere in the universe. So we covered that, and then we launched into what people say was a very passionate interview with Dr. Lynn Kitai, who's a Phoenix-based physician, herself one of the 10,000 witnesses of the Phoenix Lights, which included, by some witnesses who were able to measure it, a real estate agent with stakes on the ground at a real estate development up to 2 miles wide, a craft 2 miles wide that glided slowly over Phoenix and over most of the state of Arizona on the night of March 13th, 1997. So this may well be an extraterrestrial craft. Certainly there were 10,000 witnesses to the phenomenon. And there was even one report of a fighter jet being launched from Luke Air Force Base. The fighter pilot apparently called in to the National UFO Reporting Center, and when they attempted to trace him, he was transferred to Greenland. And we all know what transferred to Greenland means in U.S. military speak. There was a secret psychiatric hospital facility hidden way in the north of Greenland for many, many years, and it was the American equivalent of being sent to Siberia, quote, end of quote. So we covered all of that, and I think it was a fair introduction to Exopolitics Radio. It was very, very exciting. We even had a story on Yahoo News. I'm reading the headline here, Progressive Talk Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Network, launch Exopolitics Radio, weekly extraterrestrial politics talk show. Political talk show hosts at Progressive Talk Phoenix, 1480 AM, are being joined by new on-air host with a celestial political beat. The Nova M Network's flagship station has launched Exopolitics Radio, a weekly program reporting on exopolitics or extraterrestrial politics, broadcast every Saturday. Now, if you missed that program, or if you'd like to hear it again, and also if you'd like to order a copy of the book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, that sourced the field of exopolitics, please go to the following website. It's www.exopoliticsradio.com. And when you get there, just click on the upper menu. It says Listen Online, and you'll be able to listen to a beautiful audio archive of last week's program. You'll be able to sign up for the Exopolitics Radio newsletter. You'll be able to send us an email, and we'll be choosing those emails and reading some of them over the air and responding to them. And you can also order the Exopolitics book, which we'll be sending you to special for Exopolitics Radio listeners, a personally autographed copy done by my own little hands, my own little exopolitical hands. How's that? We've received rave comments from lawyers. We received rave comments from Tokyo, Japan, from all over. Over 20,000 people apparently have read this Yahoo News article at last count. And we've received emails from listeners as far as way of South Florida who want to know how their local station can carry Exopolitics Radio. So as it turns out, there's an affiliate of one of the 10 Nova M Radio affiliates serves South Florida, so we directed them to the station manager of that affiliate, and they're sending them a letter. And so you can go to Exopolitics Radio and click there to go to kphx.com. And at KPHX, you can find the link to Nova M Radio, the Nova M Network, and it'll give you all 10 stations. So if you're listening in some other part of the country and you want your local radio station to carry it, check and see whether the Nova M Network has a station there. Contact them. And if not, write to us and contact local radio station in your area and tell them to contact us, and we'll be glad to get the media kit to them. It's very easy to sign up to Exopolitics Radio, which is the newest, coolest planetary galactic radio program around. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, thanking you for your response to the inaugural program on Exopolitics Radio, welcoming you to this, our second installment, and today we have very special guest, Dr. Michael Sala, who we'll be introducing shortly. He's a colleague. He's a fellow exopolitical writer. He and I both share an address called Exopolitics. We've both written books called Exopolitics, and he's the founder and director of the Exopolitics Institute.
This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We'll be right back after the break. This is Exopolitics Radio, 1480 AM KPHX Phoenix, www.1480kphx.com on the internet. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. I remember the first time I met Dr. Michael Sala. It was in June 2004 in the Congressional Caucus Room of the U.S. Capitol. That's the second largest room in the U.S. Capitol after the Well of the U.S. House of Representatives, where the State of the Union address is given. Dr. Carol Rosen and myself of the Institute for Cooperation in Space were there to address the Space for Progress Forum on the Space Preservation Treaty to ban space-based weapons and warfare in space. Phoenix Productions of Phoenix was also there filming the documentary A Critical Mass, for which they received an LA Music Award. Dr. Michael Sala, our guest today, came, and he and I are both researchers in the exopolitics field. He brought copies for Dr. Carol Rosen and myself of his study, The Black Budget Report, an independent investigation of the CIA's black budget and the Second Manhattan Project. The study provides a very telling, documented trail for exopolitics. Dr. Michael Sala is a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the scholarly study of the main actors, institutions, and processes associated with an extraterrestrial presence that is not acknowledged to the general public, elected officials, or the mass media. His groundbreaking book, Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence, Dandelion Books, presents the first scholarly framework for understanding the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. Dr. Sala is an internationally recognized scholar in international politics, conflict resolution, and U.S. foreign policy, and is the author and or editor of an additional four books, including The Hero's Journey Toward a Second American Century, Essays on Peace, While the Cold War Ended, and Islamic Radicalism, Muslim Nations, and the West. So, we're very happy to welcome Dr. Michael Sala to Exopolitics Radio. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Alfred, and thanks for that introduction. I'm really happy to be part of this enterprise that you've launched to look at exopolitics issues through this radio program that you've pioneered, and I'm delighted to be able to talk about some of the topics that, like the black budget, and I hope we can get some clarity on exactly what's behind that and what the purpose is for, and just how serious an issue it is for all American citizens who are interested in the exopolitics phenomenon.
You know, just to jump right in with both feet, you write in your paper, which is available at your website, www.exopolitics.org, quote, "It needs to be emphasized that the unofficial black budget and Manhattan Project have legally evolved in ways to respond to a national security contingency that is yet to be revealed to the American public. The classified adversary that this elaborate secret system has been developed to respond to is arguably a potential threat that warrants an extraordinary network of covert programs that dwarf the original Manhattan Project and annually consume as much as $1.1 trillion in a non-transparent manner. More disturbingly, the importance of Manhattan II is such that the CIA, that's the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, has evidently used organized criminal networks and the drug trade as sources to partially fund Manhattan II," end of quote. Now, as you know, March 3rd, 1997 marked the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights phenomena in Phoenix, and we're on KPHX in Phoenix, and I wanted to ask you, jumping in again with both feet, whether you thought that the Phoenix Light phenomena, was that a black budget craft, an extraterrestrial craft, or perhaps a mixed human extraterrestrial craft? What is your opinion on that?
I think the Phoenix Light phenomenon, judging from the size that people have reported, and there have been a number of different witnesses and film and photographs offered, but they seem to focus on an incredibly large craft that's approximately a mile in width. And if that is the correct estimate of the size, well, then I think that would qualify it for being an extraterrestrial vehicle. There are flying triangles that have been created through black budget funding. The estimate for the size of those is approximately 200 yards, 600 feet. Edgar Fouché, a whistleblower, former engineer, spoke at length about the flying triangles and the TR-3B, and that is using those budgetary funds from the black budget to create a craft that uses anti-gravity technology. So that would account for why a craft, flying triangles, seem to move very slowly or seem to make no noise, and that these have been sighted throughout the US and in places in Scotland and Europe. But I think in the case of the Phoenix, if the size was a mile, then we are probably looking at an extraterrestrial vehicle.
Right. So tell me, going back to the study of the black budget, how does the black budget system work? How is it enforced? And why is the media and the public in general so ignorant about it?
Well, those are great questions, Alfred. The black budget basically comes out of legislation that was passed in 1949, which is the CIA Act. Basically, that enabled the CIA to raise funding. I described the mechanisms that the CIA would use. And it used language that was very strange at the time, and now we can understand exactly why they used the language. And I'll just read out the relevant sentence from the CIA Act of 1949. It says, quote, "The sums made available to the agency may be expended without regard to the provision of law and regulations relating to the expenditure of government funds, and for objects of a confidential, extraordinary, or emergency nature, such expenditures to be accounted for solely on the certificate of the director," end quote. Now, that's an extraordinary piece of legislation, to say that the agency may spend money without regard, quote, "to the provisions of laws and regulations relating to the expenditure of government funds," end quote. That means that any funds that the CIA gets, it can choose to spend those or direct those in ways that completely are outside any government regulation, any legal oversight mechanism that's in place, and in fact can be used for siphoning criminally raised funding. So I don't think that this is an accident. What you have here is an official piece of legislation specifically designed for money laundering, funds that have been raised through a number of sources. Many of those are criminally related, in my opinion.
Right. Now, you mentioned that the CIA has evidently used organized criminal networks and the drug trade as sources to partially fund the Manhattan Project 2. Now, we haven't gone to the Manhattan Project 2, but what are some of the organized criminal networks and the drug trade sources that you've come across in your research whereby this $1.1 trillion in black budget is raised every year?
Well, there are two main sources that I've researched. One is the work of Catherine Austin Fitz, who was the Assistant Secretary for HUD, Housing and Urban Development, where she basically was driven out of her position in HUD because she implemented financial reforms to track the movement of funds through HUD. And in HUD, there was in 2000, I believe, the year, where there was $56 billion missing. And that's an example of the kind of funds that go missing in these agencies like HUD and that are not financially tracked at all. Well, she tried to track that, and she was basically forced from her job. And then soon afterwards, her company that she created to track the movement of funds through government agencies was driven into bankruptcy through spurious litigation and through a legal mechanism whereby district court judges were holding up the case so that it would drive her company into financial ruin. That's one example. The other is the work of those who have been researching the CIA and the drug trade. And you have Michael Rupert, and you also have the Gary Webb and the Dark Alliance, who basically look at a lot of the evidence that the CIA was behind or complicit in the drug trade. And I think what we have is evidence of how funds are raised by the CIA for black budget purposes.
When you take this, you say the CIA's black budget and the second Manhattan Project. Why do you call this Manhattan Project 2? What sorts of activities are there in Manhattan Project 2, what is this $1.1 trillion funding that we don't know about officially?
Well, it's really the inescapable conclusion that one reaches after they realize the magnitude of the black budget. I think it's the only explanation that makes sense for why it is that such vast sums of money are being raised in ways that circumvent any congressional oversight process. And as for the actual size of the black budget, we know in terms of the financial irregularities in the Department of Defense that the Inspector General has reported, for example, in 1998, $1.7 trillion couldn't be accounted for. These were the movement of funds that basically no auditor could track. In 1999, you had $2.3 trillion doing the same. That couldn't be accounted for. And in 2000, $1.1 trillion. So all of that averages out to $1.7 trillion that the Inspector General of the Department of Defense couldn't track. He couldn't explain where these funds were going. There was no way of being able to determine whether these enormous funds were being used in an appropriate way or not. And I think what that demonstrates is that there is this incredible movement of funds through the Department of Defense that cannot be tracked, and I believe that that is money that is raised from the CIA, siphoned through the Department of Defense, and then goes into black projects. Now, the thing is, $1.7 trillion, if that is in fact how much is going into these projects from black budget funding, well, that is more than three times the current Department of Defense budget. For the year 2007, the Department of Defense budget will be $440 billion out of the funding from Congress. So that black budget pool of money is three times greater. Well, where does it go? What's it for? I mean, these are the obvious questions. And I think the inescapable conclusion is that they are going to fund a vast series of projects, black projects, such as these TR-3B fleets of flying triangles, which must be incredibly expensive, funding those types of projects all outside of the government oversight process, all outside of what the public is aware of.
Now, there are a number of researchers. For example, we have a legal case in the UK, which is now current. There's a young gentleman who was an internet hacker named Gary McKinnon, and he allegedly hacked into certain secure computer systems of various agencies of the U.S. Department of Defense. And he believes that he stumbled onto what he calls a space navy, and that is both personnel and vehicles of the U.S. government, perhaps the U.S. Navy or some other organization, which were active in interplanetary flight and perhaps based elsewhere within the solar system or elsewhere within the galaxy. Mr. McKinnon's appeal is now pending before the House of Lords in England, and initially he was only going to get a suspended sentence for what was thought to be a harmless offense of hacking until the Office of U.S. Naval Intelligence got involved and want to extradite him and perhaps give him up to 70 years in jail. Some people say they would ship him to Guantanamo because he may have stumbled upon what some writers call Alternative 3, and that is a vast secret complex, underground complex of underground bases in North America and around the world, and underground bases on other celestial bodies within the solar system connected by actually functioning spacecraft developed like these flying triangles using the black budget funds. I know that this sounds fanciful, but we have to account for data like the Gary McKinnon case.
I think you're absolutely correct there, Alfred. Gary McKinnon case gives us some evidence of some project that involves fleet of vehicles and personnel involved in piloting those, which is beyond the normal military craft that we are aware of. and McKinnon's reference to these fleets of flying craft and officers associated with them, I think is a pointer to vast numbers of craft that are created and built out of funding that does not come out of any kind of conventional defense appropriation or defense budget allocation, that the funding for these types of hidden or black covert projects that use extraterrestrial technologies to take personnel, military personnel, from one part of the country to another, or from Earth to another planet, or even beyond, I think that all of that funding comes from the black budget that we've been talking about. And we need to remember that if this kind of technology is real, if we do have anti-gravity craft that can fly from the Earth to distant parts of the solar system or other solar systems, and that there are all sorts of weaponry that have been developed in association with these technologies, that conventional defense technology is really redundant. So that means that if they're spending $440 billion in 2007 on the Department of Defense, then what would be spent for the real defense, which is the black budget-funded network Manhattan, as I describe it, would be vastly more. So then $1.7 trillion wouldn't be so ridiculous.
We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Michael Sala, on Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Welcome back to Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We're with our guest, Dr. Michael Sala. Book, Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence. You've written about the early years after World War II, where groups including the Rockefeller brothers, David and Nelson, aided by their sort of operative analyst, Henry Kissinger, were able to establish various groups such as PI-40. These are secret study groups, PI-40, the study group, and finally MJ-12, which essentially were set up to establish secret government policy regarding Manhattan Project 2 and regarding an extraterrestrial presence, and how these eventually privatized, actually took the U.S. president out of the loop on all of these. I wondered if you could talk about how the Rockefeller brothers and these groups and the way that Kissinger has acted sort of appropriated this black budget and has kept it out of the loop, and how extraterrestrial policy has policy toward extraterrestrial civilizations has in fact been made over the last 60 years.
Well, I think there's a really important set of issues that you've raised there. One is the Majestic 12 control group that was created to oversee all projects and all government activity related to the extraterrestrial phenomenon. Now, that was created by President Truman back in 1947, and we have records, references to the MJ-12 group being created back in 1947. That was by Truman. Now, of course, that control group were people that Truman and the personnel around him at the time believed would be suitable for managing these projects. Now, the president had direct oversight in that. I mean, his people were involved in that, and they reported to him. What happened in 1952 was that you had a new president elected for the first time for, I think it was, at the time, it had been approximately 20 years since the Republican had been in office. So President Eisenhower in 1952, he brought in a new team of people to run government for him. And one of the most prominent of these people were Nelson Rockefeller. He was someone that was very closely involved in terms of being a national security advisor or being a special projects advisor for President Eisenhower. And one of the things that Rockefeller arranged for was to have the system that was created to control the extraterrestrial phenomenon have that largely privatized, that it went into the corporate sector. And I think they did that for a number of reasons. One, of course, Rockefeller and the whole Rockefeller family are very closely tied in with corporations, so they're comfortable with the corporate structure, and they saw corporations as being placed to play an important role in this very important issue. I think another reason why they did that was that it would be much harder to track what was happening if a lot of the projects and the funding was shifted into the private corporate sector. But that would mean that the normal way in which Congress can track this expenditure of funding, of funds used for various projects, I mean, Congress has the power to go into any government agency and find out what projects are being conducted, what activities are occurring. And so if you wanted to get Congress completely out of the loop, one way to do that is you would privatize a lot of these black budget processes and the projects associated with them. You would privatize them so then Congress can't find out what is happening, because Congress does not have the power to pry into the affairs of corporations. And so I think for those reasons, Rockefeller's own interest with corporations, and because of the secrecy it provided, you had the privatization of the Manhattan II. And Henry Kissinger, he was a part of that. One reason he was Rockefeller's principal advisor, and I would be sure that he saw this strategy as really being essential. And the ultimate consequence of this privatization of the Manhattan II and the control group approving this was that the president eventually lost all control. And, of course, we all know about President Eisenhower's famous farewell speech, where he does talk about having lost control and the dangers of the military-industrial complex.
This demonstrates that now this enormous black budget of $1.1 trillion is, in effect, corporate welfare that goes directly into the coffers of the defense industries, producing a lot of the hardware and systems for this enormous, what Gary, the UK hacker, calls a U.S. space navy, i.e., they're sort of robbing the U.S. Treasury and taxpayers blind, enabling a world drug trade and a world organized crime network in order to fund this off-the-books $1.1 trillion private army and private navy to occupy the solar system. Is that kind of a picture that emerges from this?
Yes, I think you've basically got the picture pretty correct there, that there is this vast process occurring whereby corporations, along with those entities within the military, within the intelligence communities, that are all part of these secret Manhattan II projects. Vast sums of money are being created, corporations being the major beneficiary of this. And so in that sense, the corporations are funded to create these craft, these space navies, these deep underground military bases. Any project that is deemed to be essential for Manhattan II, corporations with relevant military departments and agencies would be funded through this black project. And ultimately, the taxpayer, the ordinary American citizen, the wool is being pulled over their eyes. I mean, they're not being told what is really happening. There's an incredible amount of waste. There's a lot of duplication. And the reason for it is that secrecy is paramount. Security is deemed to be very important. And so that means that you have overlapping projects incredible duplication occurring. You have a conventional military that uses outdated technology, and you have a secret military that uses state-of-the-art extraterrestrial reverse-engineered technology to basically establish colonies or bases throughout the solar system and beyond. And of course, what needs to be done is to bring some transparency and some accountability into this process. And that's where we come into some really interesting questions about, well, you know, what is the national interest? What is appropriate for national security? I think these are all legitimate questions, but I think using organized crime, drug trade, to raise funding so that it escapes the oversight processes established through Congress and approved by the American people is simply something that is incredibly wasteful, incredibly violating the U.S. Constitution, and ultimately, I think, and this is the biggest reason, is that strategically it doesn't make sense. It doesn't answer the security dilemma that the control groups are struggling to deal with, in their view.
Right. Now, we're coming to the end of this segment now, and we're looking forward to your coming back on a continual basis, because we're just beginning to scratch the surface here. But if we take, for example, the Phoenix Lights events, and we look at whatever force or entity, who, what, when, where, or why was behind the craft of the Phoenix Lights that glided back and forth over the state of Arizona, it appeared that their intent was to alert the population and sort of throw this entire extraterrestrial information embargo into overload. I know that that's sort of an anthropomorphic projection, because we're kind of guessing here, but is that something that you would think?
I think what the motivations of the extraterrestrials are is a very interesting one. I think there are many extraterrestrials who are showing up in the skies because they do want the secrecy system lifted, and I think that is something that would be of great interest to the rest of humanity if we do have transparency in what exactly is happening with the extraterrestrial phenomenon. And once we have transparency there, once we know that they're here, they're interacting with us in many different ways and are working with the government in some areas, then we can start to bring some kind of accountability into all of this, and then, of course, we can make it as democratic as possible, which I think is very important as well.
Yes, Dr. Sella, I'm going to have to jump in here just because of time constraints. We're really looking forward to your next program on Exopolitics Radio.
Thank you, Alfred. Aloha.
We have been with Dr. Michael Sella, director of the Exopolitics Institute. His book is Exopolitics, Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence. His website is www.exopolitics.org. This is Exopolitics Radio, 1480 AM, KPHX Phoenix, www.1480kphx.com on the Internet. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We'll be right back after the break.
This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. And we've just heard an in-depth interview with our exopolitics commentator, Dr. Michael Sella, in a report written while he was at American University, establishing the existence of a CIA black budget estimated at about $1.5 trillion per year and an extensive network of deep black projects that it funds, as well as the legal framework, has held that black budget together. And it's that black budget that is an integral part of sustaining the continuity of the permanent war economy. And the permanent war economy is a way by which both the Earth and humanity is kept from its true destiny, and its true destiny is as a sustainable, cooperative, peaceful, space-age, new energy-based space exploration society. Now, I often like to say that we're looking at the ABC future, and it's A for Armageddon. The black budget is funded so as to set us along a trajectory which is toward a nuclear war future or toward a depopulated future of, in effect, living inside a worldwide police state using unconstitutional laws, following the desires of what we can call an international war crimes racketeering network. And a B future would be a future of global pollution, of increased climate change, of increased global warming, more depopulation coming from increased flooding, loss of food supplies, disappearance of coastal cities, all of these dystopias that New World Order reports from the Club of Rome and other entities of the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization have attempted to portray. There's a third alternative. We know as futurists that we can choose between an A future for Armageddon, a B future, and a C future, which I call the SEE future, or the exopolitical future. And the exopolitical future involves claiming our heritage as galactic and universal citizens, breaking through the information embargo, and knowing that we live in a highly populated universe filled with intelligent, evolving civilizations operating under universal law, the bulk of them ethical and more intelligent than ourselves, certainly. We're a relatively young civilization, and all of us mediated by universal politics, or what we can call exopolitics. And we on Earth are just coming aware of this. What we need to do, and what Exopolitics Radio is about, and why your listenership, what we call in the psychotherapy trade active listening, is the human consciousness beginning to understand that our planet lives inside a populated ecology of intelligent civilizations, and that the time has now come for us to rejoin them. And whether it will take citizen diplomacy between us and the extraterrestrials, if the Anglo-American Zionist bloc continues its embargo, we'll have to see. There are other governments, governments such as the government of Brazil, which recently declassified all of its extraterrestrial-related files and gave them to researchers. The government of Mexico did likewise. The government of France, the government of Russia has been very open in certain respects. And so gradually this embargo is beginning to fall apart, thankfully just in time. So this is Alfred Weber. We hope you've enjoyed this program. Next week, please stay tuned. We have a special program with our exopolitical commentator in Washington, D.C., Steve Bassett. He'll be giving us his opinion on the 2008 presidential election disclosure dream team. And then you will hear the first official Exopolitics Radio commentary from yours truly, Alfred Weber, your host, on the true exopolitical message contained in the famous Chicago O'Hare aerial phenomenon sighting of November 7th, 2007. Did I mention that that was U.S. midterm election day? Oops, I might have given the game away. Okay, then. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm Alfred Weber. This is KPHX Phoenix, 1480 AM, Nova M Radio, 1480kphx.com. Please listen to our audio archives at www.exopoliticsradio.com. You can go there and sign up for our newsletter if you'd like to order our book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. You can do so at www.exopoliticsradio.com. exopoliticsradio.com. We wish you and yours a wonderful and miracle-filled day. Thank you.